And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 799. We're bringing it back as we've done the last couple of years. We're going to talk some second and third year players with one of the top prospect guys in the game. You can find him over at RotoWire. He does the Wednesday RotoWire podcast. He does all their top prospect work as usual. And he's on Twitter at RealJRAnderson. James Anderson, how you doing, my friend?
Doing great, Bubba. Always enjoy coming on the pod and talking with you.
Yep, always a good time. Looking at our yearly tradition, so looking forward to that. Before we get into some second and third year players and whatnot, let everybody know what you guys got going on over at RotoWire. It's always slam packed with good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a kind of a surprise. Just let our Discord users know, but I'm going to do a surprise update to the Dynasty rankings next week as kind of a Christmas present. And I'm also taking next week off from the pod. So just something to get everyone through the holidays. So look out for that big update to the Dynasty rankings next week. Kind of gotten through all my redraft prep. So there's going to be a lot of sort of changing of valuations and stuff on those dynasty rankings, plus all the player movement that's happened since the end of the end of the regular season. So that's kind of the big thing people should be on the lookout for. But YouTube 15, if you want to get 15% off a RotoWire subscription, definitely check that out. And then obviously I always do the massive top 400 prospect rankings update in mid-January. So tons of prospect and FYPD content coming in January.
Yep, always great stuff. We talk about it on Bubba and the Bloom when Ryan and I aren't prospect guys. So we reference the top 400 when we're doing our analysis before we talk about players quite often. So that's a go-to source for me when, is this guy even fantasy relevant type question? Like, where's the ETAs and whatnot along the way? So yeah, very good stuff, folks. Hope you guys check that out over at RotoWire. Let's get to it. I think last year I did this in ADP order. This year I did it team by team, essentially. It's pretty easy to pick up on as we go through here. But we'll talk ADPs and more. And we'll start with one that might not take a whole lot of time to discuss because I think we know how good this guy is, but maybe it's more so what should we expect is where we're going here. And that's Nick Kurtz, who just, you know, came, I wouldn't say out of nowhere. He was just recently drafted is why I would say out of nowhere. But blew up with 36 home runs at 290 last year, James, in 117 games in Sacramento, which is absolutely phenomenal. And right now, over the last 7 days, has an ADP of 19. So in a 15-team DC, that's pretty early, like middle to early second round. That's really rich for a lot of people, not for others. Where do you sit on Nick Kurtz, who, like, I guess the ceiling's pretty high, but what is the floor is the question, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, he's fantastic, obviously. I think he belongs to be, like, I think he should be going in the top 25. I think it kind of comes down to each individual drafter and just sort of what are you looking for with a hitter you're taking in the top 20, a hitter you might be taking, you know, even higher than that. I've been passing on Kurtz like early second round, but it has nothing to do with me just not liking Kurtz. It's just like first base is pretty deep. He's not gonna steal bases. You're paying for just this monster rookie season. Sometimes guys don't even skip a beat second year and just kind of keep going all the way to the Hall of Fame. Like, this could be that type of thing with Nick Kurtz. Like, he's that type of special hitter. He was getting compared to Jim Thome even going into the draft. And he, you know, his ridiculous onslaught, and partly because he was doing it in Sacramento, kind of reminded me of like those like early 2000s, like steroid era first base type of seasons we'd see where all the guys were like 6'4, 6'5, 6'6, and they would just put up these ridiculous power RBI, you know, OBP type of seasons. Like, Kurtz kind of is a throwback in that regard at first base. He can just put up insane counting stats given the home park. But it just kind of comes down to what do you want to do with that second round pick? Do you want to take a first baseman who's not going to run, who, you know, I think he's going to run high BABIPs his whole career, given how hard he hits the ball. But I think there is a bit of a range with the batting average. Like, it could be 250, could be 260, could be up in the 280s, 290s. Like, I think he's special enough to get up there, but you might end up using a top 20 pick on a first baseman who hits like 255 and doesn't steal bases. So he's a fantastic player. He belongs off the board in the first 25 picks. It just depends how you want to build your roster.
Yeah, definitely. And like the question that I always come down to is if I'm, you know, drafting, wanting to get a more power heavy approach early, and I tell myself I can build average and speed elsewhere type situation, it comes down to in the second round, I'm looking at like a Nick Kurtz or Pete Alonso. Like, do I go with the proven track record of Pete, or do I take the potential, like, just breakout star that is Nick Kurtz? And that's always the question I have in the second round is which one. And like, just the stubbornness of me, it's been more Pete, but the draft I'm in right now, I actually took Nick Kurtz in the second round. So like, I'm trying to play that game to try to see how my builds feel. That's kind of why we do a lot of early drafting. But yeah, I agree with the Nick Kurtz thing. I'm always stubborn with the younger players. That's why I talk to people like you to try to kind of work through that stubbornness. His teammate, Jacob Wilson, he was a hitting machine to start the year, got banged up, and it was good, but not what we saw in the first couple months of the year. Still solid hit till it finished sitting 311 on the year, 13 homers, 5 steals. I don't know, like the power was always the question with Jacob Wilson. And even with the 311 season last year, James, his ADP over the last 7 days in DCs is 173. So it's not like people are going wild for him. He's gone as low as 235 four drafts ago in a DC. So pretty cheap if you're looking for a late shortstop or even a second shortstop in a DC. Where are you at on Wilson? Because the other question I have is, the rumor came out on Tuesday, is Ha-Sung Kim, the A's offered him a 4-year deal. And he turned it down. And that, like, and Kim can play third, he can play second. Don't get me wrong, he can move around. But that also kind of made me wonder, like, are the A's all in on Jacob Wilson? It should be, but it was just kind of a weird question. So where are you at on Jacob Wilson right now?
Yeah, I'm not worried about him because of the Kim thing. I definitely think the A's love Jacob Wilson. Like, he's a good defensive shortstop too. I think that was more just trying to stack the roster with another shortstop to put next to Wilson at second base or third base. You know, I'm sure they were well below the $20 million he got for just 2027. So I'm not worried about Wilson from that standpoint. And like, really the only thing that was surprising about his rookie season to me was the power. And so like, that tells you about a guy, if him hitting 13 homers was a big surprise, like he more than doubled the home run output that I would have projected from him. I think you can give Sacramento a decent amount of the credit there, but he did hit like 5 or 6 on the road. I know one of those was in Coors, but even so, like I would have expected around 5 or 6 homers from Wilson over a full season. He got to 13 in less than a full season. So he definitely exceeded my expectations. And, you know, everyone that's doing these early drafts, like for the most part, they're all sharp rooms, especially the DCs. And so you have people looking for other things from their middle infielders or shortstops. But, you know, he's not my type of player. Like taking a Nick Kurtz in the second round isn't my type of thing. Taking a shortstop who's not going to steal double digit bases and isn't going to hit 20 homers isn't really my type of thing either. But I think you could end up with these guys on your roster and take down leagues. They're going to be productive. If you're getting Jacob Wilson, like around pick 200, you know, I think you got to just take it, because you're getting everyday playing time from a guy who could hit 300. And just, he's going to chip in. Like, he's not going to be great in power, he's not going to be great in speed. But I think he at least showed last year that he's not going to be like a 5-homer, 4-steal type of guy, which I did think was in play. He might only be like a 12-homer, 5-steal type of guy, but that's still better than what I thought it was going to be. So not a guy that excites me at all for fantasy. Like, he's just not my type of player from a counting stat standpoint, but I do think there's a scenario potentially where he just slips further than he should in drafts this year.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's why I mentioned like he was 235 low the last four drafts, says a lot of where he's gone. It's strictly a batting average thing to me. If you're building your team, it's depth in a DC. It's a Luis Arraez profile, which I don't draft at all. That's just not me. So, again, probably really good real life player. Now, the fun thing would be is if they let him off and then put like Kurtz and company behind him, he could probably score 100 runs, and that might change the conversation just a little bit with Wilson. But that's a lot of what ifs with Sacramento. Last one I have here for the A's is the law dog, Lawrence Butler, who people were very, very excited for last season, and things did not go as planned. He still finished with 21 homers and 22 steals, but hit 234. It's almost like a a version of Michael Harris where the expectations were high. It underachieved, but still was 2020. You're like, okay, not the end of the world, but you're talking yourself into it, basically. Had knee surgery. Apparently, that was a big issue that I wasn't fully aware of last season. Where are you at on Lawrence Butler? He's going around pick 155 right now.
Yeah, I was going to say that before you did. Like, just the, like, I can't remember a more disappointing season where a guy went 2020 for the first time. It's not like he'd gone 2020 before and he had a disappointing season. Like, he did it for the first time and it was still a disappointing season. Yep. And I was all over Butler last year.
Yep. You weren't alone.
My big concern is just he was pretty bad against lefties and they have some very qualified platoon mates for him if they want to sit him against lefties. So I would be banking in him sitting against most lefties in 2026 and then kind of do with that what you will. Like, he could go 2020 again. Like, he's kind of the power speed version of like Kerry Carpenter, where it's just extreme production, but you just know he's going to sit against southpaws. So you got to factor that into the runs, the RBIs, and there might even be some periods where you don't want to start him if they've got two or three southpaws on the schedule. So, pretty high price for a platoon outfielder, but he showed last year, like in a down year, he still went 2020 while sucking in against lefties.
Yeah, that's my thing. Is like, it's a platoon outfielder, so that's kind of like keeps me wary in the draft room when I see this. But the other point, as you've mentioned, is that the 2020, like, what if he goes back to hitting like 260? Now we're talking 25-25, maybe even approaches 30-30. It's like the skill set's very good. The fall was interesting, like we did not unexpected, to say the least. Let's go to Baltimore. Jackson Holliday, who I was already pretty excited about entering this season. We finally saw a full year, you know, the ups and downs, but he kind of seemed like he got better and better as the season went on. Finished 17-17, hit 242. Now he's got that big meat Pete guy hitting behind him, which shouldn't stink when it comes to run production. Holliday has an ADP of 138. Over the last 7 days, he went 116 in the recent draft champions draft, which is his highest he has gone. So where are you at on Jackson Holliday? Because I might be too excited on him, but I'm pretty optimistic.
Yeah, you know, we could maybe disagree slightly on this one. That's good. I honestly don't know what to expect. Like, I think there's scenarios where he has just a monster breakout year. But I also think it's possible that as the lineup keeps getting better around him, he could potentially slip in the lineup. And, you know, how stuck with him in the leadoff spot are they going to be? You know, if he's got a 314 OBP again, or like a 320 OBP, like, is he going to be locked into that leadoff spot? You know, I think that's something to keep an eye on, but you know, he's going to be productive. It's just where does the price go? Like, I think I'd probably take Seydon Rafaela over Holliday, and he goes quite a bit later. So like, I don't know if I'm going to end up with any Holliday this year, which isn't something I'm happy about necessarily, because I do see breakout potential, but if that price just keeps going up, you know, it's a productive player, but he still has never hit 20 homers or stolen 20 bases in a season. He's never topped like there's a lot of stuff he hasn't done that players going in the top 125, 150 have done. So, I think you're projecting a decent amount if you're pushing him up to like the 100 range, but, I mean, he's a big time talent. I think he's been pretty underrated at times, but I don't know if there's a big breakout coming. It could come, but it might just be kind of who he is.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that. We are a little off on how we feel about him, but as his ADP climbs, I'm also not as excited, let's put it that way. I was liking him when he was like 160, 170 range, like sitting back there. And because second base is so bad, where I'm like, okay, this works. Hit towards the top of the order, score a bunch of runs. Then Pete signs and the ADP climbs with it, which I understand. But again, to your point, he's got to stay at the leadoff spot for that to work out. I'm just optimistic, and I'm going to be 23. There's a lot to like there, to your point. But again, it could fall flat on his face. The whole Orioles kind of fell flat on their face last year. That's why they're having a massive facelift with that lineup. But yeah, he seems like he's a boomer bust at a bad position. So it's like you either go for it or you wait. And I want to ask you about Rafael because I didn't put him on the outline, but I'm glad you mentioned him because on recent other shows I've been doing, he's a very like confusing slash controversial player to discuss. Like people aren't sold on because like he was a great defensive outfielder that he plays second base. Every time they moved him, he struggled. But he's another guy almost like the Law Dog, puts up a very good power speed season kind of out of nowhere, and people are bummed about him. Should we be more excited about Sedan Rafael at second base, or is Christian Campbell still chomping at the bit? Because he actually was decent at AAA when he went down. Like, there's a lot of moving parts there that kind of – I don't know what to do with Rafael is what I'm asking.
Yeah, you know, I think there's really encouraging signs with Rafael of, like, him continuing to get better. Just big-time gains with his Statcast data last year. Max EV jumps 4 miles an hour, barrel rate goes up, hard hit rate goes up. Like he is going to always be one of these, you know, really aggressive hitters. He's going to swing all the time, but he's going to put a ton of balls in play. And I'm not worried at all about the playing time. I just think he's kind of like the heartbeat of this Red Sox team. Like his glove in center field is just such a defining characteristic for them. And I do think he will hit in the bottom, like third of the lineup. Like that's the one thing I don't like about Rafael is the lineup placement. But second base, outfield, just love that. You mentioned how bad second base is. But I mean, just having a guy that's eligible at second base and outfield is just a huge thing to have in that range of the draft. Like I look at what he did last year, like 249, 16 homers, 20 steals. Like to me, that's kind of like the floor for him in his age 25 season. So I just think he's a screaming value right now.
Love it. Yeah, and he's going four picks after Jackson. So to your point, that's why that comp works really well there. Let's stick in Boston, a player I know you're very excited about. We talked about him in the meatball draft. I believe you took Roman Anthony this year, if I remember correctly. And he was having a really good season before he got banged up. Again, it seemed like he's getting more and more comfortable is the way I would say it. The thing is, though, is you're betting on this talent because his ADP is 61 over the last week. Where are you at on Roman Anthony right now? Because I know you're a fan, but are you a fan at 61 right now?
Well, I think I actually took him exactly at 61 in our meatball draft.
It was on the turn. Yeah, I remember that.
I would take that pick back if I could, though. That's probably the pick I regret the most from the first 11 rounds. I just wish I'd taken Shea Langeliers there instead of Anthony, if I'm remembering correctly. You know, he's a fantastic player. Like, there's nothing bad to say about Anthony. I've kind of compared him, like, very, you know, different players because, like, Bryce Harper came up a catcher, and now he's a first baseman. But I've compared Anthony to Harper in the past because of, like, I just think it's kind of a better real life hitter almost than a fantasy hitter, even though, like, in his prime, I expect Anthony to be going similar range as, like, prime Bryce Harper. Like he could be a first rounder. He could be a late first rounder, like an early second rounder. But he's just got such a good eye. He's so patient. You know, he's not up there selling out for power. He's not going to steal like 25, 30 bases. It's going to be just a really high OBP. He's a really, really good player, but I don't know if Roman Anthony, you know, taking him as your OF1 in the fourth round or like late third round, even like that's, or I guess it would be late fourth round, early fifth round. Like that's just a little rich for me on a guy that I would probably take the under on 20 steals and the under on 30 homers. But like he's just so good as a pure hitter. It's like it's very rare that a team just lets a lefty play every day right away, and the Red Sox had no problem letting Anthony face same-handed pitching.
Yeah, I think I might have one share of Roman, and since then I stare at the draft board and like, yeah, he's really good, but I don't know I could do it right here. To your point, like your fourth or fifth pick, that's still a pretty vital pick that you can find some five category guys that I think you can trust a little more, or a reliever or another starting pitch, like stuff like that at a point in a DC, which makes it tricky. And as a whole, the Red Sox lineup, when you look at it right now, is there's a lot of puzzling players right now, like Jaron Duran. What do you believe in? Willie Abreu, so on and so forth. Tristan Casas, like, what are we going to get this year from Casas? The other one I wanted to mention on this show, though, unless you want to hit on those, you're more than welcome, but you don't need to. Marcelo Meyer. He was one of the, like, it was him and Roman Anthony were like the dudes, and even Christian Campbell. Like, this is our crew coming up last year. Meyer got banged up, had the hand injury. We've seen the little bit of power speed throughout the minors. Right now, he's projected to be their starting third baseman with an ADP of like 376. So very, very affordable. What are your thoughts on Meyer entering this season, especially coming off that injury?
Yeah, I've never been a huge Meyer guy just because of the I just think it's a low floor or a low ceiling, high floor profile with a guy who's not going to run very much. You know, he's eligible third base now. You could get a guy who's going to chip in like 6-7 steals at third base, which isn't nothing, but he's always had a hard time putting together full seasons from a health standpoint. So I'd be projecting like 120 games, maybe 15 homers, 5 steals, decent average. So like I said, just decent floor, but for a prospect with as much name value as Meyer has, like, I just don't see a high ceiling at all for fantasy.
Good to know. That makes the ADP make a lot more sense. Let's head to the White Sox, a team that is pretty loaded with young talent. We saw a lot of them come up last year and got more coming down the pipe with the Sox. Let's start with their middle infield, Chase Meidroth, who he's second base shortstop now. As he's been moving around, he was started out shortstop, got hurt. We saw Colson Montgomery. Meidroth moves over. So he's got the dual eligibility. He's kind of a little, I want to say, power, some speed, really good hit tool. He's like, to me, he's kind of a poor man's Jacob Wilson, but might run more, if that makes sense. Could be totally, totally wrong there. But Meidroth's ADP is 343, and I like that a lot better than Wilson's ADP. So where are you at on Chase Meidroth entering the season?
Yeah, no, I think he's a great pick right now in DCs. Just a really nice piece to have on your draft champions roster. I was going to actually bring up, I was going to compare him to Wilson as well. So like it's lower batting average. Like I think that's the big thing in Wilson's cap that we can't poo-poo the fact that we're expecting Wilson to hit around 300. Like it's just that's a rarity. The big difference I think is Meidroth swings much less. He's much more patient. He's got a better eye. So he's going to have more called strikes and he's going to strike out a bit more. So the batting average just isn't going to be in the same range. But like you said, he runs more and actually like significantly more. Like I think, you know, he probably tripled him up in steals last year. Meidroth did on Wilson. So it's not nothing to get a guy that's going to play every day, steal 15 to 18 bases, you know, hit around 10 homers. Like his defense is good enough. I think Meidroth plays every day for the White Sox this year. So like he's not gonna kill it in power, obviously. But I think he could hit high in the lineup and do everything else pretty well.
Yeah, no, he's been a very popular pick for me. He gives you that middle infield stability, the depth pieces you're looking for. There's like in theory he could be your third, second base and shortstop at the same time. So that depth that you're really looking for. Love him. And I can see a world in fab leagues where he becomes quite valuable at middle infield throughout the season. So very, very serviceable ball player there. Kyle Teal was a part, came over from Boston in the trade last year for Garrett Crochet. Got his first cup of coffee in the bigs, hit 8 homers, stole 3 bags, hit 273. He's hit for a good average throughout the minors, power speed. He's I compare him to a poor man's Agustin Ramirez, minus the better batting average than the Goose. Teal's ADP is 185 over the last 7 days. So he has been a target of mine in drafts. I might be overexcited about him, but I do like the skill set. Where are you at on Kyle Teal?
Yeah, I really like Teal. I think he's like, there's a reason he's all like, this is kind of sharp drafter season and the sharp drafters set the ADP. And I'm not surprised that his ADP is where it is because I think he's a great option if you're looking for if you like to get your second catcher in that range. I think he's great. I haven't ended up with him just because I sometimes get even more greedy at catcher and get my two catchers before Teal. But if I have gotten shut out on my second catcher, I'd be very happy to take Teal like a round ahead of ADP even. He's good at everything. He's not going to hit 25 homers, but he's good at everything for fantasy, especially for a catcher. And I think it shouldn't get slept on just how good of a rookie season that is for a catching prospect. 125 WRC plus as a 23-year-old while being an above average defender. Like, that's just, you don't see catchers do that very often. So he wasn't overmatched at all. And then I think there's room for like a big step of growth just as a run producer. So yeah, I'm a big fan of Teal.
I love that. You almost echoed a part of our catcher preview on Bubba and the Blue on Tuesday. And I said, if you want Teal, you might have to start taking him a round or two earlier because he's going to keep moving up the draft board. So you almost, the skills are great. So you nailed that one there. We're on the same page on that one. The last White Sox I have written down is Colson Montgomery, who average was putrid. Like, we can go with that as 233, but he did hit 21 home runs. Like, the power was ridiculous. It seemed like every other day you turn on, you know, MLB Network and he's hitting another home run. He still strikes out a ton. So it's one of those profiles that's like, okay, the power's awesome, but man, like, there's some concerning aspects elsewhere. His ADP is 231 though. So you mentioned sharp drafters. They're not pushing him up the board per se for that power. Where are you at on Colson Montgomery?
Yeah, I'm not really going anywhere near him this year. Just low average. Like, I don't know how you could look at what he did in the minors and project anything better than like a 225 average from Montgomery. And I was shocked that he got to that much power, given how mediocre of a prospect he looked like at AAA. And I kind of think there could be some regression coming. Like, I could see him being, you know, like mid-May, he's hitting like 190 and there's questions about, is he going to get sent back to AAA? Like, that I think is in the cards for Montgomery. You know, also possible he's up all year, he hits 30 homers, but I don't really see a scenario where he hits like 245 and he's up all year. Like, I think it's still going to be a low average and he's just going to be all power, like no batting average and, you know, decent defense. And that's why he's up. But he's also not going to run like 71 games in the majors last year, zero steals. Like, he could be one of the bigger category losers among shortstops, just because you want to get some speed from your starting shortstop and you might get zero from him.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the speed as well, because I rejoiced picking him up in Fab last year. Loved every bit about that. 21 home runs out of nowhere is just great. But in the draft room, like, between the average and the speed, and like, there's a world where I could see him struggling and the White Sox go with other options potentially. Like, it's that bad at times. So we'll see where that goes. The Cleveland Guardians, Kyle Manzardo, people were waiting for this day to happen. Then he was platooned, and then the platoon started going away late in the season. He's played 142 games, got 531 plate appearances, which is outstanding for what you're hoping for. 27 homers, kind of what we knew the power was good. Hit 234. You'd like to see more there, but I think there was some good to go with the average, like some optimism potentially with him. And he's got an ADP of 233, so it's not costing you a lot at first base. What are your thoughts on Manzardo for 2026?
Yeah, I really like Manzardo. I like the cost. I love this range at first base, like the early to mid 200s. And, you know, maybe he goes up a little higher than that. Like, I kind of like him more. I like him the most of those first basemen that kind of go in that range. And I agree. Like, I think he's one of these lefty hitters who's improving enough. And, you know, part of it is just the options around him. But I do think he's going to start playing on more of kind of an everyday basis this year. Just a big time air pull guy, which we like to see. You know, coming up, Manzardo was always hitting for high batting averages. I think we know the player we're investing in 2026 isn't a guy that's going to hit for a really high average. But, you know, you have all these other guys like the Torkelsons that kind of go in that range. Like, he might hit for the highest average of those, you know, power over hit first basemen. I think he gets to 30 homers for the first time this year. Hits in a nice spot in that lineup, drives in a bunch of runs. So yeah, I think he's a really nice, you know, if you really wait on first, I'm not even that pissed off if Manzardo is my starting first baseman, if I've got a nice option at the corner. But I mean, he's a really nice corner option.
Yeah, I usually have him in the corner, but I get it. I know last year, like in redraft leagues, I would do some of those drafts where all of a sudden your last first baseman might not be the sexiest pick, but a Manzardo type would be pretty nice at 235 or whatever when you're drafting. Instead of the Tigers here, they have a lot of youngsters, but we got one we're going to talk about here. Dylan Dingler, the catcher that got his break when Jake Rogers got hurt and never really gave it back. Played in 126 games, 13 homers, hit 278, which is remarkable for a young kid. Well, he was 26 last year, so not as young, but still pretty good to see with Dingler. ADP is 212, so he's going a little bit after your Teals of the world. But I think he's another – I like him as a fallback option. I don't know what your thoughts are on Dylan Dingler.
Yep, I like him as a fallback option too. I think, you know, I have him as one of my catchers in the meatball draft because I just couldn't get the catches I wanted ahead of him. And
that was frustrating in that draft. They were going just ridiculously odd. Yes, I'm with you.
And exactly how you put it. He was my fallback option there. And like, if I hadn't taken Dingler, that I did not like the options behind him. I think he's nice because he's not going to hurt you anywhere. He's going to play a lot. His defense is so great. He's going to be in the lineup a bunch. And he's got a little, some sneaky stuff. Like, you know, you can look at his like X stats and you can get kind of excited and see maybe room that for him to push for like 20 homers. But I don't think he has to do that at all. Like, I think he's just going to play a lot and not hurt you.
Yep. I fully agree. I think I think he's a really strong floor with, and maybe he runs into a few things. So I think there's a lot as a catcher too. That's what you're looking for. I'm really looking forward to what you have to say about Jack Caglione, because the expectations were through the roof last year. Obviously struggles took place. And now the Royals have already picked up Isaac Collins. They're rumored to be in the market for like 75 other outfielders. It feels like, if you believe in roster resource, Cags isn't even in the bigs right now, which I think is crazy, but maybe I don't know. Like, there's a million questions you could have with Cags. ADP is 225. So the drafters are still in. And if he produces like the skills we saw in AAA before, that's a heck of a price, but he's got to play too. So where are you at in Caglione right now in drafts? Because I am just staying away and I'm regretting it half the time.
Yeah. You know, I'm 1-for-3 on Cags in DCs. I didn't get him in my first one. I wanted him. I didn't even have the chance to get him in the first one because Greg reached and took him in the first 11 rounds. I reached in my second one because I just really wanted him. And then somebody else reached for him in my third one, but you know, not a guy that I would want like 50%, 60% exposure to necessarily, because there's a lot of scenarios where this doesn't work out, or at least you can't rely on him for stretches of the season. But if you're looking for someone going past pick 200, with a very realistic chance of finishing as a top 100 player, I think Caglione is just sitting right there. It's pretty obvious. I think like Eno was comping him to Caminero at first pitch, which was getting everyone excited, but it is that kind of like approach where he chases a lot, but he doesn't strike out as much as someone who chases a lot often does, because he's able to just get the barrel on the ball. And he's like, I just think he's going to be a 30 homer, 35 homer hitter annually during his prime. And I think we could enter that prime in 2026. We might not. It might be some ups and downs. You know, maybe they make him earn a spot in spring training. You're going to come on my pod in a couple weeks and we're going to do our What Does Roster Resource Have Wrong show, and that could come up there. But
it's a good chance, yes.
Yeah, like I think it's, you know, you don't want to have already taken a bunch of big swings, like, and then you're taking another one in Caglione. But I think if you've been drafting, you know, doing a sharp draft, you know, you're looking at projections, you're taking value that falls to you. Like, if you look at your team and you think you can take on a little bit of risk for the chance at a big payday, I think Caglione's a great pick in the early 200s.
I think that's the best way to approach it, too, is, like, just realize it's a risk-reward. But if it's one of your only risks, it's a good risk to have, essentially. So I don't build your whole roster with these guys, but the ceiling is pretty tremendous with Cags, and I'm with you. We will discuss him because I don't understand how you can't have him on the roster. Like I they could trade, like they're rumored for Durant and others. So eventually there's only so many rooms at the end. But like
how are you going to look Caglione in the eyes if he's having a good spring training and say, look, see Lane Thomas over there and
exactly.
see Collins over there. Like these are the guys that we're going to start over you. You got to go back and ride buses for a few weeks at AAA. Like I don't see it happening.
We've seen the Royals do it in the past, but I agree. Like I don't see it either. So yes, it's very, very perplexing on him. Let's head to the mound with Kansas City. Noah Cameron. Noah Cameron is a guy that Ryan, my co-host, makes fun of me for because I'm like, look at him. He's boring, but isn't boring beautiful? Like the ratios were good. Now the indicator said that wasn't that good, but at the same time, it was like a Sierra around four. Like it's 4.33. Like again, not great. But you can live with that if at his ADP. Whip was good. Doesn't strike guys out. Doesn't strike anybody out. That's a big bugaboo. Like I mentioned it because his ADP is 254. So he's dirt cheap. I still haven't drafted a lot of Noah Cameron. I'm just trying to tell Ryan, like, it's not the end of the world with Noah Cameron. Maybe it is. Tell me I'm wrong. I'm totally fine with that. But where are you at on Noah Cameron? Because he's boring. I get it. It's not attractive, but he made it work.
Like, you can definitely make worse picks than taking Noah Cameron.
That's the nicest way of saying, yeah, it's not that great.
Like, I think if you draft Noah Cameron, like, you're probably not dropping Noah Cameron, and you're probably starting him more often than you're benching him throughout the 2026 season. But there's a handful of pitchers who are going, like, right around him who are also kind of second-year-ish guys. And I think they all have significantly higher ceilings. Like Shane Smith of the White Sox, I absolutely love. Joey Cantillo of the Guardians, Chad Patrick of the Brewers, and then Braxton Ashcraft and Mike Burrow of the Pirates. Like I think those guys are big time breakout, like upside and floor options in that range. Whereas I think Cameron is mostly just floor. You know, you can't draft too many lefties, and like the Andrew Abbott, like Logan Allen types of guys, like I've been wrong about those guys a lot, of just the soft tossing lefty that doesn't excite me with his stuff. Sometimes those guys just keep going out there and beating ADP. But Shane Smith, Cantillo, Chad Patrick, Braxton Ashcraft, Mike Burrows, like those guys I think have big time breakout potential.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. I've been drafting those guys over Noah Cameron. So totally on board with you on that one. Shane Smith's I'm glad you mentioned him because he's a name that even last year, I don't think people appreciated how good he was. And he was a Rule 5 pick. Like they had to keep him up there. And the White Sox, like, he was really, really good for the White Sox for like what you expected from him. So yeah, I love all of those. Again, yeah, Noah Cameron's boring. It's a floor play. Nothing great comes out of it, I don't think. But I would, the upside of the others are great. Mike Burrows is really, really sneaky. And Toby mentioned him on the FPAS pitching panel and brought some good nuggets to the table on that one. So lots to like with some of those Pittsburgh pitchers. And you won't even notice them because they'll have Chandler and Skeens, and eventually Jared Jones will be back in that rotation. So good things in Pittsburgh. Let's go to the Angels. Christian Moore was kind of excitement was around him last year. That didn't pan out, obviously. I was hoping he'd play third base last year, but that old Rendon guy was in the way. That's gone now. Like, it's his, supposedly, it's Christian Moore's world. He still has to earn it, I think, because, like, the skills are great, but he still has been on the struggle bus in his small sample. But his ADP is almost 420, James. Like, it's free in drafts. Is that worth taking a shot?
I don't think so. Like, he's just not for me, really. I just don't know how the batting average isn't a killer, and I don't think he runs enough. You know, the playing time is kind of the selling point. I'd rather take Christian Moore where he's going than Colson Montgomery where he's going. because like you said, he is free, and I think the playing time is almost as secure, even though he was way worse than Montgomery last year. But I don't know, man. I think it could be the type of thing where he's back at AAA after a few weeks too. So there's big power in there, but I haven't seen any signs in the upper levels that he's close to getting to it regularly enough for me to want him in my lineup.
Yeah, I was excited about him last year, not so much this year. I don't think I have a share yet in my, like, and I dropped a lot, so it has not happened yet. A player that's people are really in on until the draft takes place, and it feels like they're like, I don't know, because he goes right after Jackson Holliday, right after Sedane Raphael, and that's Luke Kuechel. And Kuechel has an ADP of 147 over the last 7 days, 4 homers, 14 steals, hit .302. So it looks like batting average should not be a problem. Speed for days. Still some questions to be had, though. Are you cool with the price on Kuechel, or would you still rather have like a Raffaella in that range?
Yeah, I was really high on Kuechel past few years, but I think he's getting overdrafted, at least to date. Like, I think by the time March gets here, I don't necessarily think he'll be getting overdrafted, but yeah, I just don't really see that much difference between him and like Bryson Stott. You know, Ozzie Albies is going a couple rounds, a few rounds later. You know, even like Otto Lopez, I think is somewhat comparable. So I think people are looking at the crazy batting average and just how much he ran in such a short amount of time, and they're trying to look at what that could be over a full season. But I just didn't really see any signs that he was close to being like a 20 homer guy against big league pitching. So you're drafting the average and the steals, but I don't think you're necessarily getting that big of an average bump over some of the guys who go later.
That's totally fair. That's why I was in on him like my first draft, I think, after the meatball, and then it's disappeared quickly after that. I love the bus driver, Otto Lopez. There's stuff to be excited about there, I think, for sure. Zebby Matthews, a very frustrating person to roster last season in his 16 starts at a 5.56 ERA. But if you're looking for grains of salt, 3.82 Sierra. He had an 18% K to walk, and there were improvements as the season went on. I actually wrote about it for our Patreon. It might not be as obvious because people just look at the ERAs and whatnot, but there were some slight improvements in his skills. Zebby Matthews comes with an ADP of almost 300. It's 295 over the last week. I'm interested to take a chance on a guy with that kind of upside, but I understand the appeal to not be interested. Where are you at on Zebby?
Yeah, I don't mind him. The one thing that scares me is like the fastball, like that, because he's coming up as a prospect, he was always putting up these ridiculously low walk rates that were getting everyone excited. And then what started getting like scouts excited is when the fastball went from like low 90s to mid 90s, but it's still like it's fairly straight. It's, you know, big leaguers have no problem catching up to 97, 98 if it's in the spots where he's been putting it. And that part of it kind of worries me a little bit. I know he started throwing the sinker like halfway through the year, but sinker didn't look that great to me either. So I think he's still kind of searching for that perfect fastball or combination of fastballs, but I don't mind the price. You know, I will say, like, I know that this guy definitely isn't someone that we would normally talk about on our chats, Bubba, but I loved what I saw from his teammate Simeon Woods Richardson down the stretch. And he starts throwing a splitter down the stretch, and Simeon Woods Richardson became a different pitcher over the final like 5-6 starts. And so I would take that twin starter in that range over Zebby.
I have more Simeon Woods than Zebby to that exact point. Ryan has a couple sheets he has for the Patreon that, and one of them's a pitch mix change. And then Simeon showed up on that as the season went on, obviously, because of the splitter. But then at the same time, that correlated with like a K to walk change, like this whole thing. Just, it was a whole new pitcher, to your point. And I'm definitely with you on that. I'm glad you pointed him out, because SWR, as we call him to make life easier, seems very attractive, especially at his ADP. Jason Dominguez, the guy that many want to break out, except for the Yankees, looks like he might actually have the job for now. It is December 17th. A lot can change in the Bronx, but his ADP is just around 200, and like, he's got a law dog profile to me. Like, it's a 2020 guy that, you know, average could fluctuate. Who knows? But I think the skills are there. Again, I'm optimistic. I've wanted him to break out. Where are you at on a guy like Jason Dominguez? Because I think if you're drafting him, you're trusting the Yankees, which is a bold strategy at times.
Yeah, I definitely do not get the sense, like, from the quotes that, like, I've never seen an Aaron Boone quote about Dominguez that gives me confidence that Aaron Boone likes Dominguez, the baseball player. Right. And I understand it, because, like, if you see him play the outfield, like, you could definitely see how that'd be frustrating. So it's just kind of like, how confident are you that he plays basically as much as he did last year? Cause I think he's a good pick where he's going, as long as he just doesn't have any point in the season where he loses playing time. And he can still sit against like some lefties and still be a good pick where he's going, because he's going to run, he's going to hit for some power. You know, there's a lot of intriguing outfielders that go in that range. So I think you kind of have to be in a position where you need that speed. There's another guy we're going to talk about in a little bit who I like a little bit more in Dominguez, who goes in that range. But yeah, I think he's totally fine. Like, I think he could easily outperform his ADP by like 100 spots as long as the playing time's there. But I do always have that in like the back of my mind. And then, you know, Grisham picking up the it wouldn't stun any of us, I don't think, if all of a sudden like Dominguez hasn't played, he's started once in like 7 games in May or something like that.
Yep. That's why I haven't drafted him. Like, I like the skills offensively, but I'm like, I'm not playing this game anymore. We're not doing this. So again, I could regret it, but I'm fine making mistakes. His teammate Cam Schlittler, Schlitt happens, was awesome in the postseason. The regular season, he wasn't too shabby either. Like, it was an ups and downs for a 24-year-old rookie, I would say, but the skills were pretty good across the board. And we have an ADP of – the thing is, yeah, the ADP is like 125, so he's not free by any means. So do you believe in a second year of Cam Schlittler being worth maybe your SP2, or if you're aggressive, SP3 these days?
I definitely don't want him as my SP2. I think he's kind of falling a little in like the recent drafts. Chase Burns is staying up there. Sheehan staying up there. Like, Tetsuya Mize passed him. Bubba Chandler in the last couple drafts has passed him. Mizorowski in the last couple drafts has passed him. So, like, if he's going, like, after all those guys, and then it's just kind of like Schlittler versus Pablo Lopez, Schlittler versus Ryan Pepiot versus Robbie Ray versus Michael King, like, these types of guys, like, I do not mind taking Cam Schlittler in that range. I think there's – people are reacting to the velocity jump, but, you know, like – we talk about projectable pitching prospects all the time, and this guy kind of makes good on that projection, grows into his velocity, and now we're like holding it against him. I mean, I get it if he's going like up in that McLean, Burns, Sheehan range, but I think he's just more talented and has, like, I just think he's better than some of these guys that go in that like 150-ish range. So if he's going 125, I don't want him. If he's going 150, like, I think then he might even be like your SP4, and you might get 200 plus Ks from your SP4 in that case. So, there's definitely risk here, but Schlittler was a guy that I was excited about like early last season based on what he was doing in the minors, and was someone I was trying to get like when he came up. So like, it was a velocity jump, but like, I wasn't startled that he was having this type of success in the big leagues because of how dominant he was in the minors. So like, the main risk I see is just him blowing out his UCL, but that could happen to Burns, that could happen to Chandler, so I don't mind where he's going. Sure.
Yeah, no, and to your point, he has had some weird ADPs. Like, looking at the ADP tracker that Ryan built, like the last 5 drafts, he had a 103, which is his is high, the highest he's gone, because 150 is the lowest. So 103, but then it went 140, 145, 109, 118. So it's from draft to draft, it's varying quite a bit. So like to your point, there's a world where at 140, 145, right? Okay, cool. That's nice. But then there's other drafts he's going right around pick 100, and that's a little tougher to stomach with him. Let's talk Chandler Simpson, because people love Chandler Simpson. He's fast. Yeah, he's very fast. That's established. Zero power. Zero power whatsoever. He's just off my draft board. His ADP is 155. Again, maybe you love him. I don't know. I don't seem like your profile, but I'm just going to say it. What's your thoughts on Chandler Simpson?
Yeah, I mean, like what I would say, like about like Nick Kurtz, Jacob Wilson, Chandler Simpson, like I think you could win an overall championship drafting any of those three guys where they're going at ADP. Like I don't think drafting these guys like puts you in a bind just because you took them. I think it's just all about like what type of build are you comfortable with, like as a drafter. Like, are you comfortable like needing the average and speed that Chandler's going to get you like after pick 100? Like for me, usually I want to have that average and a good chunk of that speed before I get to pick 100 and like not have to be making those types of moves. But I mean, you could draft Nick Kurtz, Junior Caminero, and then all of a sudden like Chandler Simpson's a great fit for your roster. True. Where he's going. But to me, that's almost more of like an auction play, because then if you don't get Simpson, then your build's kind of screwed. The one thing I would say about Simpson is like, you know, you look at like the projections and it'll be like 441 plate appearances is the depth chart's projection for him. Just don't go in there and change that to like 600 plate appearances and see, oh, well, now I'm getting like 65 steals or whatever. Like, I just don't see him playing that much. He's that bad of a defender in the outfield. The Rays have that many options. I don't see him being this guy who's just racking up plate appearances. So I buy the projections kind of being low on him from a playing time standpoint. It's just all about the roster build, all about the specific manager and how you like to build your teams.
Yeah, and that's a great point. Like I poo-pooed it quite a bit, but if you want to build appropriately, it's the world where it fits. And your auction point's great, because you can like, okay, I can pay X amount here and, you know, take a value here. There's ways to, that's why I love auctions. Like, you can build things so differently and like have success. Where in a snake, you almost have to commit to the build, which is different. And then you have to hope it falls to you at that commitment, where the auction, you can actually do it. His teammate Ian Seymour, pitcher. Again, this would be a name that would come up when we talk down the road, because right now Steven Matz is projected to be the fifth starter while Ian Seymour is in AAA. Maybe that's fine, because the Rays do stuff like this. It's probably not that far off, weirdly enough. But it feels like Ian Seymour showed enough in his first season that he deserves more run. He is going with an ADP of 313, so I think people are worried the run might not be as lucrative as we would like. What are your thoughts on Ian Seymour for 2026?
Yeah, skills-wise, like I thought him and Cameron were really similar coming up as prospects. I think I even like compared them before the year last year. I think skills-wise, like if we felt as good about him getting the starts that Cameron's getting, like I think he belong in that exact same range and maybe even like a tad higher, just because of the team context potentially being a little bit better. But I think the Rays are just going to Ray, you know, like he's got two minor league option years remaining. They've just got endless fascinations within their, you know, organizational depth chart. Like, I'm sure they're going to try stuff with like Yoendris Gomez and Griffin Jacks. And like, there's all kinds of pieces. They've got a bunch of stud prospects in the upper levels. Like, I just don't think you can bank on more than like 110, 120 innings out of Seymour in the big league rotation.
Yeah, that's fair. That's why I've been kind of like, I like the skills a lot. Like, the Rays just terrify me. But then I also tell myself, okay, is McClanahan and company all going to stay healthy? Like, there's just a million.
Back well, and I don't, forth. I definitely don't trust that either. So like,
yeah, no, I'm not saying there's so many back and forths. Like, I'm like, oh man, he could really do it. But then even if the path was there, it's like, okay, here's a 3-inning start. Okay, now he goes five. Like, it's just, like you said, Rays are going to raise, and it makes it very tilting. All right, the American League's loaded. Let's get to the National League, where it's a little different. Jordan Lawler, just got to bring him up because it's a yearly tradition with Jordan Lawler, because technically he's probably still a prospect because he hasn't played. And right now the D-backs are debating making more trades to make things interesting. I'm bringing in an Alex Bregman and company. The skills at the minor leagues have been great for Lawler. At the big leagues, they haven't been, but he really doesn't have a playing time at the big leagues level. ADP 335. I still can't click the button.
Yeah, I think Lawler is kind of almost more of a like an online championship pick. Like, yeah. I would want him as like one of my last picks in an OC where I could just drop him right away on the first fab run if I wanted to. He's kind of like Dominguez, where I just don't get any sense that the team likes him that much.
What it feels like.
Yeah. And the one thing, like, you know, if you want to go looking for reasons to be optimistic on Lawler, he was pretty damn good in his final stint with the big club last year. And he especially got like his big bugaboo is just, you could put together a crazy whiff reel of him just putting together hopeless swings against sliders off the plate. But he got his chase rate under 20%, I think, over that final month, which is interesting. And you know, of course, I found some interesting Coby Mayo stuff from the final month, like a week before they signed Pete Alonso. So, like, I would not be surprised at all if Lawler is fully blocked by opening day. And I think a trade would honestly be his best path to not being blocked. But I also saw he's playing center field in winter ball. And even back when he was a draft prospect, I thought Lawler might fit best in center field just because he had this crazy athleticism. He still has elite sprint speed. So, you know, maybe that's a path for him in Arizona, but I don't know, man. I think it's tough to take a guy like that in that range of DCs where it's upside, but you're paying for a guy that you can't rely on at all, like even in April, to be someone that you can plug into your lineup. And the signs at the big league level are just so faint that it might just be noise. So I haven't drafted him yet, but like I said, I think like the OC or even just like any fab league, I think would be more appealing to me than a DC on Lawler.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Cause I'm with you. I just don't see the playing time. I don't know what it is. Like, when they brought him up the first time last year, it's like, okay, here's his chance. There's an opening out there. They still didn't play him. So I'm just like, okay, that tells me, at least told me stuff about the philosophy of the team. Let's head to Atlanta. Hurston Waldrop. He made some noise in his first run with the Braves, as they needed every pitcher they could find last year at some point. And he was very, very serviceable. You know, a below 3 ERA in 56 innings. Still young, still has probably some things to improve on. But we're talking about an ADP of 256 for Waldrop, who should be in the rotation this year. I don't mind it. It is that pocket where there's a lot of these guys we talked about in that pocket of pitchers, and he kind of is in there as well.
Yeah, I don't mind it at all. I thought the ADP was going to be a little, like, I think he went in our first 11 rounds of the meatball.
I took him, yes.
Yeah, I thought round 11. You know, no offense. Like, I was not going to be interested if the ADP had stayed in that range.
Oh, no.
But, like, now that it's, like, in the mid-200s, like, I have no problem clicking on Waldrop because team context is great. Like, I think that they're going to, you know, I think he's probably going to win double-digit games. And he's got one of the best splitters in baseball. And he started flashing down the stretch last year. I mean, he's always flashed, you know, dominant upside, but there's just been a ton of tinkering with the pitch mix, and just, you know, command has been a big issue for him at times. So, like, that's why I didn't want to use like a high pick on him, because I think the floor is fairly low. But he's got a chance to be a big time value in the mid 200s if he can stay healthy.
Yep, I like him a lot. He was a popular favorite fat pick, one of my favorite fat pickups last year. So, like that a bunch. A few more here. PCA, just got to mention him because he is a second year player. But more so, I want to get your thoughts. His ADP is like 29, so he's the end of the second round. Are you fine with that? Like, the, you know, we're talking about the 30-30 guy that could go like 30-50 or what, like, who knows? It's the batting average is going to be the question. Like, where does that land? So are you fine with the ADP with the skill set you get from PCA?
Not really. Yeah. I mean, I would take James Wood over him all day. I mean, we could lump these two.
Yeah, together. Just go for it. Definitely, please.
I mean, I haven't taken either of them yet just because I haven't been picking at that end of the board. I've only done the three drafts, but
they are going right next to each other. So that's a good
point. Like, I just, James Wood, like, all day. Like, I would go 10 out of 10 Wood over PCA because I think I know what I'm getting from Wood. Like, I know he's going to just destroy baseballs and steal double-digit bases, hit in the heart of that order. He just hits the ball too hard to have too low of a batting average. And then PCA, I don't know what I'm getting. Like, am I getting first half PCA? Am I getting second half PCA? Second half PCA shouldn't go anywhere near the top 50. So, I don't want to use a pick that high on a player who I think is that volatile.
Yeah. I'm not a PCA guy at all. I like James Wood. Again, it's a strike. Can he improve the swing and the miss? And the one thing with Wood, when I dug into him a couple weeks ago, even when the swing and the miss got worse, his contact skills were still great. Like, when he made contact, obviously wasn't making as much, but like those skills didn't go away. So I'm trying to get at.
So yeah, he's like kind of in that like Stanton Judge range of just like he's not going to hit 230. He just can't. He just hits the ball too hard.
It's like your Nick Kurtz commenter, like the BABIP's going to be high because he hits the ball so hard. So yeah, I'm with you. I'm glad. I'm really glad to hear that because I'm a staunch no PCA guy in my world. So like that,
I also try really hard to not like let bias like sip into to my analysis at all. But I mean, he's also one of my least favorite players to watch. So
it's a tough. I do love when he jumps for a home run that's 45 feet past the fence. But no, I'm just kidding. that's the old man in me saying get off my lawn. All right, Chase Burns. Now this is you kind of mentioned him earlier in passing. Like, we know the stuff's electric. We know there's the ups and downs. There's also the ballpark. And if you want Chase Burns, you got to pay for Chase Burns, as his ADP is 114. So like, it's not like, you know, top 100, but he goes around some other veteran pitchers that you might feel more comfortable with. Let's put it like with Sonny Gray's, Gossman's of the world. What are your thoughts on year two for Chase Burns?
Well, I've got one share. I'm glad I've only got one. Like, so he's the type of guy where I would not want to have too much because I do think, and Dave McDonald was on my pod last week. He was kind of talking about how worried he is about Chase Burns from a health standpoint. I don't think he's that off base there. You know, I will just say, like, from a upside standpoint, it doesn't get that much more exciting than Chase Burns. Like, for projection systems to be projecting a 20% K-minus walk from this guy based off of 8 big league starts, like, you just don't really see that unless the guy's an ace. And so, like, he has that type of upside on a start-to-start basis. Like, he could strike out like 40 batters over 3 starts. Like, he's that type of guy. But it could, the bottom could drop out at any point just given his past arm injuries and just how hard he throws.
Yeah, I'm with you. Those young arms that we saw that we were excited about last year, there is so much volatility, and people know me by now. I'm a pretty risk-averse drafter for the most part. Like, I'll take my darts, but usually later in drafts. Like, I'll take that Sonny Gray right there pretty much 10 out of 10 times in the draft room, and that's just who I am. And I live with those pluses and minuses, so that'll probably be the case again this year. Now, this one's a different kind of – it's not even risky at the ADP. I want to ask you about Zach Veen, because this time last year, everyone's like, oh, the next big prospect in Colorado, skills are great. We got this, like, you know, power speed guy coming up. And obviously we know it did not go well. It went fine at AAA. We saw the skills still looked okay at AAA when he was demoted, but at the big league level, it wasn't great. The reason I want to ask about Zach Veen, though, is his ADP is like 5'10", and he's still, at this point in time, he should have a chance to make the big league roster again. Should we be buying back in at that price tag as like your, what, 8th, 9th, 10th outfielder in a DC?
Well, I think he deserves to be going way later than all the guys we've talked about. I was not someone who was excited about him last year. Like, I really did not understand the bidding last year on him. Like, I do some of my teams with Todd Whitestone, and like, we were putting our fab together that week, and like, he was like, yeah, I think Veen's going to go for like a ton. And I was like, why? Like, I just don't get it. Like, I just don't think he's very good. I don't think he's a good prospect. Like, I haven't had him ranked in my top 100 for multiple years. I think he belongs going where he's going. Just not a guy that I've ever really had that much interest in.
Sounds good. Yeah. It's the Rockies. Like, they could screw up absolutely anything. Like, do you obviously going much different in drafts, like Jordan Beck, way better than Zach Veen?
Love Jordan Beck where he's going. And I talked about Adale Amador recently on a pod too. Like, I would take Amador easily over Zach Veen if I'm looking for a Rocky going in those mid to late rounds. I think Veen is, he got a ton of name value, like, as a prospect from like when he was drafted, and like, people just remember the name and remember that he's a Rocky, but I just think he's been overhyped for a long time.
All right, let's talk about a team that's full of hype and full of dollar bills, the Los Angeles Dodgers. Roky Sasaki is a player I have no clue what to do with for a few reasons. Looked great as a closer. They went and signed Edwin Diaz. Fair, fine. That's totally fine. They want to put him in the rotation, but they have like seven arms, and given there will be openings throughout the season. But like, it's tough. It's almost like Ray's going to raise with the pitchers here. Sasaki's got skills. Like, I hope he, if they just gave him, let him go, cool. ADP's 221. Like, I don't know what to do with Roky Sasaki.
Well, I bet I know that you're not drafting him at 221.
No, I'm not. That's the problem. Like, I love the skills. If I knew he was like the fourth in the rotation, I'd be much more inclined to take the shot, but I don't even know if he makes the rotation right now.
It's kind of telling to me that the drafting community was clearly hoping he was going to be the closer.
Yes.
Because like, as soon as the pieces started coming together that they didn't want to use him as a closer, and then they signed Edwin Diaz, like, now it's just like, why would I draft this guy in the top 300? He doesn't look like he's one of their five or six best starters. He's not going to close games, so why do I want him?
Yep. I'm with you. It's frustrating. And to be fair, as a starter, he didn't show the skills as he did with the reliever. So who knows how that translates, but yeah,
it's like a blind bet, right? Like, you're
100%.
We have absolutely no evidence that this guy can be an effective big league starter. So it's just a total blind bet.
And it goes to show, like you mentioned, like, it's sharp season in the draft rooms. He's going right next to Aaron freaking Nola. And we know who Nola is. And he's going right next to him. Like, talk about two polar opposite skill sets, and they're going right next to each other. That is, that's pretty entertaining to me, actually, because Ryan loves Nola, and I give him so much crap for it. Jacob Marcy, this is a guy I've actually heard smart people like Rob D say this is your next PCA. We'll see. But Marcy does have the power, has the speed, really strong debut last season. Right now his ADP is 140. Honestly, the way things went last year, I thought it would be higher. So it feels like, I don't know. If you're a believer, this is a great pick. If you are kind of skeptical, this makes sense, I guess. Where are you at on Marcy?
I don't see that level, that like PCA level. I didn't see it with PCA though last year either. The one thing with Marcy, he hit the five homers. He had the 187 ISO. I'm pretty sure the power was just all right away though, right? Like I'm going to go look and be a little selective here, but like, yeah, like over his last 172 plate appearances, he hits one homer, slugs 378. Let's see. Yeah, tiny home run to fly ball. So I guess you could say he was unlucky there. But I think it's the speed you're buying. I get the, like, I think it is 30 plus steals. So that's probably got to go in the top 200, and the playing time is safe. But I don't know, man. I might just be missing something with Marcy, which is certainly possible. Like I said, I wasn't I wasn't right about PCA last year, but not a guy I'm really excited about besides the speed.
I guess I'll ask you this, and your answer is probably neither. That's fine. But, like, you have Marcy at 145, you have Simpson at 155. Would you rather go Marcy?
Man, I might actually go Simpson.
Okay, see, that's interesting to me. So that's good.
Because I think Simpson is really helping in batting average, and I think Marcy is probably just helping in steals. He's going to better Simpson in the runs and the RBI, which is definitely meaningful, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely close. Like I could see going either way on that one, but I think you kind of understand by the way I'm answering it, that it's mostly neither.
It's neither. No, I figured as much. I figured I'd ask it because most people, it seems like what I listen to, it's Marcy, Marcy, Marcy. So that's why I liked having the alternative point there. A couple more real quick. Jacob Mizorowski, the Miz, another guy kind of in that Burns-esque, but seems like he has less control than Burns. Still electric stuff with the Miz. We saw the good, the bad, and the ugly last year. ADP's 123, so he's going, you know, he's going 10 picks after Burns. There's still those veterans before and after. He's going right before Schlittler, as you mentioned. What are your thoughts on the Miz?
Yeah, I'm kind of out on him at that price. I just don't trust the command, and I also don't know how long he can stay healthy throwing as hard as he throws, especially his breaking pitch. So it's just like, I would take all those unproven guys. I know you're probably like fading all those guys, but like, he's the guy I'm least interested of those guys who you're all not interested in. But like, I would take all those unproven guys over the Miz.
Yeah. I'm usually uninterested. The drafts I will do the unprovens in is if I'm aggressive on pitching, then they're SP3s. I'll take the chance then. Or to your point earlier with Simpson, in an auction, when you're sitting there and all of a sudden it's like, okay, it's supposed to be like a $14 guy and he's sitting there at like 10. All right. Now you've convinced me to like take a shot and like see if this is worth it. Like, you know, that you've been at the table when that kind of stuff happens. Like, yeah. Okay, now this guy suddenly fits my build and we're going to like make this work type deal. So, all right. I have to ask about Ronnie Mauricio. We asked about Jordan Lawler. So we got to ask Mauricio. Mauricio might get traded by the time, you know, people in the next couple hours before this comes out. But, like, this was another like highly touted prospect. Injuries have derailed things. We did see signs of life in the minors before he came back. I don't know. It's more of a, do you believe? And he's got an ADP of 476.
I don't believe, and I don't think the Mets believe either. And I think he probably gets traded soon. And if he's on the Mets, I don't think he plays. So I think he needs to get traded to be interesting. And I'm just not that interested.
All right, we talked about Simpson. We talked about Marcy. I like this outfielder more than both of them, probably combined. And at an ADP of 206 is Dalen Lyle. I really liked what we saw in the plate discipline in his first run. He hit for average. There's some power, some speed. I really like Lyle. I could be, again, totally wrong with it. It could have just been a great first cup of coffee. But at an ADP of 206, what are your thoughts on Dalen Lyle?
Yeah, I really like Lyle, too. I like him more than Marcy and Simpson. I think he's kind of similar to Michael Harris, honestly. Just in terms of like the fantasy stats that I'd be expecting for, hoping for. I've got Lyle on most of my dynasty teams because of how impressive his minor league start to the year was last year. Like, he had always been this notable prospect, mostly because the national system sucks so much. But last year, he actually became like a real prospect I was legitimately excited about before getting the call. you know, obviously the bat to ball is incredible. You would think that this guy would be like 24 or 25, given the lack of buzz around him coming into last year. But he's entering his age 23 season, coming off that awesome rookie year. I don't really see a major weakness with this guy. Like, he's not going to hit. Like, I don't think he's going to hit 25 homers, probably doesn't hit 20 homers, but he could hit 20 homers, and I think he's going to play a bunch and hit for really high average, steal 20 plus bases. So yeah, it's just kind of where do you got to take him? Because I think he's the type of guy people are chasing up the board right now.
Yeah, he's going to be on the move. I think there is that 2020 upside if things really get clicking. I like the Harris comp, and you mentioned moving up the board. Like, his ADP is 207 over the last 7 days, but like over the last 10 drafts, he's gone anywhere from 173 to 223. Most of them are before 200, which again, his ADP is 207. So he's moving up, to your point. And I wouldn't be shocked if he's honestly close to like 150 come March. I think his skill set is that appealing to many drafting. Well, we did it. As usual, I appreciate you joining me, catching up on these guys. I think we covered most players that are of relevant. If you didn't, James will have you covered at RotoWire. So once again, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on.
Yeah, Real J.R. Anderson on social media and RotoWire.com. YouTube 15 if you want to get 15% off RotoWire sub. And like I said at the top of the show, got a surprise dynasty rankings update coming probably like the 23rd or something like that on the site, so look out for that.
Looking forward to it. Again, thanks for joining me as always. I'll be chatting with you about a week, and we'll a little over a week, almost 2 weeks, and we'll knock that one out on the RotoWire side of things. But thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back with you guys next week. For now, Bench with Bubba episode 799. Catch y'all later.